My name is Michael Cross. I'm an adjunct professor of history at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Canada. So this is politically the great irony of this man, is that he created in responsible government a system which allowed these modernizers to come to power and essentially wipe out his class and destroy his vision of the world. He was driven out of office in 1851, and the railway promoters, the financiers, took over politics. Clearly for me, the courage, this man of courage is very much the image I have. But in broader terms, I mean, beyond him personally, the message is how change came, how modern Canada was created. His role in this political revolution that was responsible government and the inadvertent results of it, the rise of the new class, the middle class. Why I say he was brave, he stood for these ideas at a time when they were seriously challenged, but also because he was so tormented personally. He was always a very shy man, so being in politics was unnatural for him. And the death of his wife was absolute devastation for him. She was his first cousin.
Right.
So they had to overcome family opposition. She was his first cousin. She was also very young.
How young was she?
She was 16 when they took up.
Okay.
The family sent her off to New York to stay with relatives in the hope that their ardor would die, but it didn't. They exchanged not only letters, but vibrations. They read the same passage of the Bible at the same time every day so that they would be in kind of mental contact. So finally, she came home, the family gave in. 1827, they got married. They had four children. They were deliriously happy. She was this idealized creature for him. If you look at her, there's nothing there that is ideal. She was rather homely. Her letters were kittenish, but nothing substantial. But to him, she was everything. You know, this lonely young man who felt out of place among aristocrats who were sophisticated and worldly. For him, she was everything. But their last child was born by cesarean section, which of course was enormously dangerous in the early 19th century. She never recovered. She was sickly for the last year and a half of her life, and finally died early in 1836. And he was obviously devastated by the loss. And he turned their love into a kind of cult. He kept her room in their home exactly as it had been when she left it, and allowed no one in until their oldest daughter was 21. She was the first person admitted to the room other than himself. And he would sit there and read her letters and think about her. And then he began this recreation on the anniversaries of their wedding, where he would go to the church where they had been married. Then he would go back to the family home. He would pick a sprig of lilac from the same bush that they had picked a sprig of lilac from on their wedding day. And then he would retreat into her room for the rest of the day. And this became his annual ritual. And he finally, in his old age, when he was living this isolation in his retirement, he decided that he would prepare himself for being with her. So he left a set of instructions with his daughter about what was to happen when he died. And what was to happen was that he was to have an operation performed on his body, a cesarean section performed on his body, so he'd have the same scar as Eliza did. They were to be in the family tomb, side by side, of course, with her coffin on the left, so she was closest to his heart. The coffins were to be chained together. He was to have her handkerchief on his chest and her letters on his chest when he was put away. Well, his daughter was one of these typical of the time. One daughter was kept home to look after the parents. Well, she was the one who had several times thought of getting married and then didn't because of her responsibility to her father. But she clearly had a resentment because she didn't tell anybody about his wishes.
Right.
So it was a month after his death when his son was going through his belongings that in a vest pocket he found a copy that Baldwin had carried with him in case he died away from home.
Right.
Which begged that strangers, if they found him, would see that this was done. So the son got the senior male members of the family together with the family physician. They opened up the tomb, which was in the side of the hill, which is now Casaloma, which is where the family home was. They opened the tomb, went in, opened his coffin, and the family physician performed the operation on his corpse. I'm not sure people realize how complex political leaders often are in Canada. One thinks of Mackenzie King, right? And his spiritualism, his talking to his dead mother and his dead dog. And yet our, you know, by consensus, our greatest prime minister, John A. Macdonald, desperately unhappy personal life, his excessive drinking, and yet obviously an enormously important and accomplished prime minister. Something about Canada that has given us very strange, but very courageous and accomplished leaders.